Motion carried. Next order of business is the approval of this evening's agenda as it's been revised.
So moved.
Any changes?
No changes.
Hearing none, Mr. Chairman, move the agenda be approved as revised.
Have a motion, one in a second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Mr. Burrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the time and place for public hearings before the Board of Adjustment. In order to proceed in an orderly fashion and ensure full participation by those here with an interest, the hearings will be conducted according to the following rules. All persons in attendance must conduct themselves in an orderly fashion and take directions from the chairman. Unruly or disorderly conduct is not tolerated and may result in expulsion from the room and, in extreme cases, more severe penalties. The applications are announced separately, and each applicant will be asked to come forward and be sworn in. The applicant will present the case, explain the request, and present any exhibits or testimony in support of the application. The burden is on the applicant to address the statutory factors for a variance or for a special use exception. The board may ask questions of the applicant as well as any of the witnesses. The board will then invite public comments. Supporters will go first, followed by opponents. Please identify yourselves by name and place of residence. For the record, all persons must be sworn in order to speak. And please be concise with your statements and avoid being repetitive. For the purposes of the hearing this evening, each side will be allotted 1 hour and 15 minutes. And it's important then that you be concise with your statements. The board may ask questions of supporters or opponents. If you have questions for others, the questions must first be directed to the board. The board will then direct the question to an appropriate individual. Once all the testimony has been presented, the hearing is closed, and the case is either voted upon, tabled, or taken under advisement for consideration at the end of the agenda. All board matters are discussed and voted on publicly in open session. All persons present may stay throughout the evening, view deliberations at the end of the agenda, or you can call the board's office in the morning for the results. And for the courtesy of those here this evening, if you have a cell phone or a pager, we would request that you turn that off during the meeting. And Mr. Chairman, this hearing this evening, of course, is a rehearing, and the board has decided previously that all written materials that were submitted at the first hearing are carried over, and they're already on record for the second hearing. So if anyone submitted a letter or report or anything at the last hearing, you need not resubmit that tonight. It's already before the board.
Thank you, Mr. Burrow. Would you like to call the first case, the only case?
First case, 10,769 Salco Partnership, DBA Verizon Water, in the south of Road 557, Briarhook Road, approximately 1,650 feet west of Road 30, Atlanta Road. A special use exception to place a telecommunications monopole.
Good morning, Mr. Acting Chairman. John Tracy from Young Conaway, Stargett and Taylor here on behalf of the applicant Salco Partnership with me, and they can all make the procession up to the altar of Mr. Burrow for purposes of being sworn in are Andrew Peterson, who's our RF engineer, Ken Farrell, who is our planner, Sue Manchel, who's the site acquisition person, Pam Bursler, who's our appraiser, and Joel DeFrades, who's our structural engineer.
You all want to come forward, please? Gather around our single Bible. Do you all swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burrow. As Mr. Burrow reminded the board, this matter was previously before you on February 28th. Following that hearing, it was determined that the property was not adequately posted, so we have to do this all over again. The application remains one for a new monopole telecommunications tower. It's not a lattice tower that comes out, which some people had some concerns with, and associated equipment shelter. The tower is 145 feet in height with a 5-foot lightning rod. It's approximately 2 miles northwest of the town of Seaford along Briarhook Road, approximately a third of a mile west from the intersection from Atlanta Road. Just so that the record is clear, when we first submitted the application, we had asked for a variance from the lighting requirement. We withdrew that at that hearing. We're not asking for that variance. I just wanted to make sure that remained on the record, that we are going to comply with the code's lighting requirements. Therefore, what we need is a special use exception in order to construct this new tower, since it's located on a residentially zoned parcel of land that's greater than 1 acre in size. The property itself, as you'll see in a moment, is located in a rural area of the county, surrounded, as an exhibit shows, by large parcel zones similar to this one. We are not seeking any variances. The tower will not exceed the maximum limitations permitted by the code, and it meets all setbacks. As the board is aware, we are the holder of an FCC license, giving us the right, privilege, and obligation to provide reliable cellular coverage to our subscribers. As per the terms of the FCC license, Verizon Wireless is required to provide reliable coverage in their license area or risk losing their license. As times have evolved, as we've discussed previously, more and more folks, professionals down to soccer moms, turn to rely on their cell phones as opposed to regular landlines, meaning there's more burdens on the system because more people are using cell phones, not just in cars as they were originally envisioned, but now for all telecommunications purposes, as well as for those of us with smartphones for data and things of that nature. As these uses increase and the numbers of people using them increase, we experience burdens on the system, which ends up creating the gaps in coverage that we've talked about before, the dreaded can you hear me now effect. When this happens, Verizon looks to find a way in which to address this problem. Primarily among the preferred methods is co-locations. It's obviously substantially less expensive if you can locate your facilities on another existing tower, water tank, or something of that matter. In this instance, as you know, Sussex County requires us to do an inventory of structures located within 2 miles. In this property, unlike the last one that you considered, there are no such properties within 2 miles, and that which is closest outside of that 2 mile ring is a property or is a tower that Verizon Wireless is already located on. What I'd like to do with the board's indulgence is go ahead and call Andrew Peterson up to testify regarding the need for this particular facility. If you could go ahead and state your name and occupation for the record for the board.
Andrew Peterson. I am Principal DBM Engineering, offices at 3230 Water Street Road, Fairview Village, Pennsylvania.
And how long have you been doing RF engineering?
I've been designing these types of facilities for over a decade. I've been involved in several hundred facilities like this one and appeared before municipal bodies such as this one, state courts, federal courts.
Okay. Are you the RF engineer who was tasked with Verizon Wireless to handle this particular project?
I am.
Okay. I guess some generic questions first. How does Verizon Wireless determine that there is a need for additional coverage in a particular area?
In the case of this facility, it was propagation modeling and network statistics.
And what does propagation modeling show?
Using some very sophisticated software, Verizon Wireless is able to simulate how the network is performing from a coverage perspective. They can show, and we'll go through the exhibits that display this, but the RF engineers, myself included, we can illustrate how the existing network is covering the geography around it, and we can also simulate and illustrate how a proposed facility at a given location and height will add coverage to the network.
And you also mentioned statistics. In particular, what statistics were used for this application?
Usage statistics, in other words, percent of available capacity on the surrounding sites were also examined very closely for this application.
Okay. Part of the process is that a search ring is generated determining in an area that you would be looking for potential properties. Can you describe the significance of the search ring in this particular instance?
In this particular instance, it's important to note that this is a dual-purpose site. Those two purposes are equally important. One is to provide coverage to a currently unserved area, mostly to the northwest of the facility, which I'll show in an upcoming exhibit. And that's the first purpose of the facility. The second purpose, equally as important, is to offload the existing site in Seaford, which is the closest facility that our attorney had mentioned earlier, roughly 2 miles or so to the southeast. That facility is currently overburdened. Projections show that it will continue to become overburdened to the point where it will not be able to serve all the customers that require service, and that is leading to problems and will continue to lead to problems with service for subscribers in the area.
What when you're doing a dual-purpose site such as this one, which is both coverage and capacity, what effect does that have on the search ring?
Well, it makes the search ring area very narrow, very tight, because the site now has to play in a very delicate balancing act role between those two objectives. One is the coverage, as I mentioned, which is on the basically the northwest side of the site, and the other, the capacity, which is on the southeast. So there's a line there between those two objectives, you know, a geographical line, that if you go too far towards one, you know, too far towards CFER, and it will diminish the site's effectiveness towards CFER, I should say, it will diminish the effectiveness of the site as a coverage site to the northwest. And the converse is true also. If you move it too far to the northwest, it'll diminish the site's ability to serve as an effective capacity offload for the Seaford site.
Okay, and it's correct that you have an updated report that that has the capacity issues included within there as well. If you could hand that up to the board while we're discussing matters.
Sure.
As you're handing it up to the board and you're walking by our first exhibit, if I'm correct, that's a propagation map, correct?
That's correct.
And if you could walk the board through what this propagation map shows.
Sure. The black numbered dots, there's three of them displayed on the map. The one labeled 110 is the closest facility. They're all cellular facilities operated by Verizon Wireless. The one labeled 110 is the Seaford facility, which I mentioned is currently overburdened, which this facility will seek to offload. That's surrounded by some of the local roads. You can see the concentration of roads there that define Seaford. And then the grayish hue is illustrating the existing coverage from those facilities. Those facilities currently are on air. They're serving Verizon Wireless customers. And as you can see, the proposed, which is illustrated with the red triangle there, that's the location of the proposed facility. That's kind of on the fringe of the existing coverage provided by the Seaford site today. And the reason for that is, like I said, this is a dual-purpose site. It needs to be able to offload Seaford, so it needs to be able to cover back into the areas, some of the areas that Seaford is covering. And it also is going to offer new coverage to the northwest. So by definition, that new facility has to be somewhere in that fringe coverage area in order to affect those two objectives.
Now, prior to building a tower, it's correct that Verizon Wireless will look into other options, such as adjusting signal strength, adjusting antenna directions, co-locations, and stuff like that, correct?
That's correct.
And that was done in this instance to the best of the abilities, and we're still left with a coverage gap, correct?
That's correct. Verizon is always seeking to leverage the existing assets to the very best of their ability. They are, after all, a business. If they could solve this by bolstering one of the existing sites, they certainly would. That's certainly a cheaper avenue than building a new facility. But in the case of this application, that's just not possible, and that's why we're here.
And it is, in fact, true that you did perform a survey to look for structures within the two-mile ring that's required by Sussex County, correct?
I did.
And there are none, correct?
That's correct.
And, in fact, the closest structure, which is beyond that 2 miles, is would be Tower 110 that we're already on, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. We were also, I was approached following the last hearing where the board determined to table this matter by a property owner to the west down Briarhook Road, the address being 4341 Briarhook Road, suggesting their property is a possibility for co-location for the construction of the tower. Did you in fact investigate that possibility?
I did.
And could you tell the board whether that property would be a suitable alternative?
Sure. The property that you mentioned is roughly 1 mile and one quarter west of the proposed location, and it really will not serve Verizon Wireless's purposes, and that's for the simple fact of the second important item or objective of this facility is to offload the existing Seaford site. There needs to be significant amount of coverage overlap between the proposed and that existing site. And by moving the site a mile and a quarter to the west, we'd be effectively moving the footprint of coverage of the site a mile and a quarter to the west. And instead of being in, you know, the 2.5 mile or so, depending on where in Seaford we're talking about, you know, 2.5 mile or so range from parts of Seaford, we're now going to be 3.5+ miles away. And that's just getting out of the reach of these facilities to effectively offload and effectively offer service to subscribers. So the simple answer is it's just too far from Seaford, and it would leave the capacity goal unaddressed, which would lead to another application for another facility somewhere in between that property and Seaford with the sole purpose of addressing the capacity issue. This solution is, you know, a 2-for-1. We get the capacity in Seaford, and we get the coverage to the northwest.
Another issue that was raised in another hearing that we've done is folks have looked at the Verizon Wireless website, and they've talked about what the website shows as prospective coverage in the area. I believe, if I'm correct, you have an example of what that is in this particular area?
I do.
Could you show that to the board?
Sure.
Now, what this exhibit shows is existing. It shows what Verizon terms reliable coverage on its website. Could you walk the board through what this actually means as far as reliable coverage is concerned?
Right. This is a true and accurate depiction of Verizon Wireless coverage when gauged at an on-street threshold. So, from a marketing perspective, Verizon wants to show potential customers the very best, you know, shine the very best light on their coverage situation, and from that perspective, this is a true and accurate depiction of coverage from an on-street threshold. From the engineering perspective, the design is for in-car coverage, and the difference there is quite significant. When you're in a vehicle, the glass, the metal, all serve to attenuate the signal to the subscriber. And after all, this is a mobile network. The device needs to work in a mobile environment, meaning, you know, in a vehicle. So although this is nice and paints a nice picture for potential subscribers, from an engineering perspective and as to how these networks are engineered and meant to work under realistic conditions, the engineering criteria is quite different.
It's true, is it not, also that this, even putting aside the fact that it's showing, and it, just for simplicity's sake, when you're talking about reliable on-street coverage, that means somebody standing outside in their yard, in front of their house, as opposed to in the house or in a car.
Someone standing and also, you know, outside and also standing still. Mm-hmm. Because the mobility factor is also, when a mobile device is in a mobile environment, when it's actually moving, the path between the tower and that device is changing very rapidly, and that affects a lot of different things and makes it harder, and a more significant buffer of signal strength is required to support that. So this is, you know, a very rosy picture of coverage for someone outside standing still, which would be great if our offices were outside and our cars, you know, and we all had convertibles and we drove very, very slowly, but it's just not realistic.
And
from an engineering perspective,
this exhibit, in fact, is showing, even when you're looking at the on-street coverage, that there are, in fact, gaps of service shown on the on-street coverage.
That's correct. Despite all those advantages that this perspective has on coverage, there's still a significant gap south of 18.
And this is something that our site will address.
That's correct.
Okay. If you could show the board, you have another exhibit which is showing the proposed coverage with the new site. And if you could walk the board through what obviously looks like significant gain coverage in this area.
Sure. Just to go back a second, all of the other items on the illustration are same as two exhibits prior. 110 is still the Seaford site with the black dot. The red triangle is still the location of our proposed. The only difference is now the coverage existing and proposed, is changed to a blue, and you can see there is significantly more coverage to the northwest of our facility, well, all around our facility, particularly to the north and west, and that is due to the fact that in this exhibit, the proposed facility is activated. It's on the air. It's a computer-generated simulation of the coverage that that facility would provide.
And it's true that this provides both greater in-building and in-vehicle coverage than what exists currently?
That's correct.
And it fills our gap in service as far as that is concerned?
That's correct.
In addition, it also addresses the capacity concerns, correct?
That's correct.
And did you have an exhibit to show the board that illustrated the capacity problems?
I do.
Okay, why don't we just show that as far as demonstrating what we're approaching, if not already at, as far as capacity. This is also in the new exhibit that was handed up to you all.
This exhibit is titled Seaford Data Utilization, and it can also be found, I believe, on page four of an amended design report that I authored to include some more specific language about the capacity need. And as you can see, the data points are actual from July 2010 through April. They're every other month data points, although you can't tell that from this graph. It's every other month that I had data points for. So from June 2011 onward, everything else is projected, and Verizon Wireless needs to and does do a very accurate job of projecting data and voice usage because, of course, they need to plan for the future. They can't just spring up sites in an instant. So this data is very accurate, and as you can see, the blue line there, which represents the data ceiling, if you will. This is a hard ceiling because of spectrum limitations, and you know, with the very best up-to-date equipment that's out there, this is the most data that Verizon Wireless can put through their system through this specific site. And I should say this is for Seaford. This is just for Seaford. That's the absolute maximum that they can supply to their subscribers. And you can see that we are rapidly approaching that. And they project that if there aren't already issues, which I suspect there are issues today during a busy hour, you know, during the morning commute, during the afternoon commute, whatever that happens to be for the site, the busy hour, if there aren't issues today, we will have issues by the end of the summer.
And what's the significance when the red line crosses over that 100% threshold? What starts happening when you get into that 110 or 120% area?
That represents, in this case, data sessions that the wheel on your iPhone or your Internet Explorer browser or whatever device you happen to be using will just kind of spin and spin until the device times out. This affects anyone who's using data, including anyone for public safety purposes that may be using the network for data, and this will affect all of Seaford and the areas that Seaford site covers, which includes some of the overlapping areas where this new facility is proposed.
In essence, you have demand exceeding capacity.
And that's correct.
Not everybody is going to be able to get in who wants to get in for whatever purpose at a particular time.
Just like rush hour on a two-lane highway that should be five lanes, there's going to be bottlenecking and congestion and long wait times. And if it already isn't in the very near future, it will be an unusable service for portions of the day.
Okay, and just two final questions for you, Mr. Peterson. Just to circle back, the new structure that's proposed would, in fact, satisfy the county's requirement for co-location opportunities?
That's correct.
Okay. And additionally, you also prepared a report for the board regarding the emissions from this particular facility. If you could just briefly walk the board through the fact that I presume we fall below the FCC standards with regard to minimum exposures of emissions.
Yes, we do. And in order to generate that report, I presume a lot of worst case, maximum traffic loading, all antennas on all the time, or all radios on all the time, at maximum power, with no duty cycle, 24/7, 365, and a subscriber standing in the main beam of that antenna at ground level, and we are still greater than 200 times below what the FCC considers safe for human exposure.
And is the board's aware if we meet the FCC requirements as far as that's concerned, the health issues, alleged health issues from cell phone towers are not something for the board's consideration? That's all I have for Mr. Peterson, unless the board has any questions at this time.
I do have a question, Mr. Peterson. The site 252, is it not capable of handling your second objective of the offloading?
That's correct. As you can see, it's significantly more distant than our proposed is from Seaford. Once you exceed, you know, roughly three and a half miles, depending on a lot of things, the site uses or loses all utility in providing any capacity offload. As you can see, there's very little, if any, overlap from the 252 site to the existing 110 coverage footprint. That's a strong indicator that that site isn't offloading 110 now. Also, you can see that Seaford, for the most part, is south of the 110 site. So,
I meant the 110 site. Okay, so the one south of that is actually a Seaford site. What you're calling Seaford?
I'm sorry. 110 is Seaford. Okay. I guess my point was, you know, the majority of the town of Seaford is south of the 110 site.
Right. Okay.
So for 252 to now, you know, get even further, you know, it may be I haven't scaled it off, but it may be 5 miles to the Seaford site. You're now and a half to 6 miles to where some of the population is. So it's even further of a stretch. It's just not going to make it.
So that 110 site is by the police station?
It's the lattice tower, yep, at the police station, you're right.
Okay. And 252 is in Bridgeville, outside of Bridgeville?
Yeah. I have the address here if you'd like. The address of all the surrounding is on page 2 of the design report. And 252 is north of Route 594, Route 404 intersection.
Okay, so that's east outside of 13.
Right.
No, that's east. That appears east of 13.
It is east of 13.
Yeah.
It's east of 13.
Mm-hmm.
The 252 site we're talking about, right?
I don't think Scott Store is on that map.
There are two other towers that are along 13, and that may be one of the ones that you're thinking of. These are facilities that Verizon is on, and Verizon isn't on those. And even those are too distant to offload Seaford. And I have them labeled on another report that I believe you have in the site inventory report, where I look for any tall structures within 2 miles. I believe those were 4 miles or so from the proposed, and even more distant from Seaford.
Okay.
So they wouldn't be an effective offload either.
Thank you. Anybody else have questions for Mr. Peterson? Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to switch my batting order slightly and call Ken Farrell up, the civil engineer. Ken, make sure you have the aerial photograph as well. Exhibit. Okay. I apologize. Naturally, I get a cold in the middle of the summer when I have three hearings in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Ken, if you could state your name and occupation for the board.
My name's Kenneth Farrell.
Need to use one of the microphones. There's one over on this side, too.
My name's Kenneth Farrell. I'm the manager of engineering services for CMC Engineering.
And what's been your involvement in this particular project?
We prepared the site plans for this project.
Okay. Can you walk the board through what the site plan shows?
Sure.
You can use that microphone over there. Just turn it around.
Why don't you go right to the big exhibit that shows the site plan there.
The aerial?
No, the you know what I'm talking about.
Trying to think the easiest way to do this. This is the site plan sheet S1 that was in the original plan set. The location hasn't changed. We're going along Briarhook Road, the northern part of the property, in what we would call the corner of the property from the irrigation system. So we're up along the road in this corner, but the irrigation system is to the west here, and the property line would be to the east there, and the road would actually be to the north.
Okay. Presently, the location, as it's shown, satisfies the setback requirements from the county code, correct?
It does, yes.
Okay. And if I recall correctly, at the moment, it's shown the tower being roughly 60 feet from the paved section of the road and roughly 54 feet from the neighboring property line.
That is correct, and our large sheet S2 has those dimensions on there that you just referred to.
Okay. One of the things, and again, I think you alluded to this, but the reason this particular location was chosen was due to the fact that it was out of the active farming area that this property is currently farmed, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And one correction I wanted to make to the exhibit, I think the plan references that we're doing shows a chain link fence, and in fact, we're going to prepare we're going to use an opaque fence around the compound, correct?
That's correct, and we agreed to that at the last meeting that we would be doing that.
Okay, so you wouldn't be able to see in from outside in terms of
board on board fence.
And the compound and the shelter itself meets or exceeds all Sussex County setback requirements.
It meets
correct?
All the setback requirements. That's correct.
Okay. It's also correct, and I think if you could show the board the aerial photograph, it's also correct that we are over 1,000 feet from any adjacent structures.
That is correct. This is what we call the zoning exhibit that I believe you have a copy of that was submitted. If you don't, I have extra copies. What this does is this shows existing structures that's in the immediate area. And, for example, the closest is this farm outbuilding, which is approximately 1,189 feet away. This farm building, which is 2,012 feet away. This home, which is 1,697 feet away. And 1,000 feet to this farm structure up there. Just to give you a flavor that although, yes, we're in the corner of the property, we're along the road, we're still far away from any existing structures. We're not, if we were to put it like onto the west side of the property, we'd be near residential homes. That's why it's another reason why this location was chosen, not only for the agricultural and the farming operation, but because we have it positioned that we are far away from existing houses, structures, et cetera.
In addition, you have an additional report to provide the board regarding the structural capabilities of this facility, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. If you could hand that up to the board. Does the board need copies of the aerial, or did you have those from the last
time? We have it from last time, I believe.
And if you could just generally walk the board through what that report is.
Yes, what this report is initially when we were at the last hearing, we prepared a structural report outlining that the tower will be designed to certain standards. We amended this report, updated it. Mr. Joel DeFreitas from my office, who's a structural engineer, is also sitting in the audience tonight, prepared this report to go into a little bit more detail. You know, for example, is the wind speed for this location will be a minimum of 95 to 120 miles per hour with 3-second wind gusts, 33 feet above the ground. What we wanted to do was give the board a little bit more of a flavor that these towers are designed to the current standards, to what is called the EIA TIA 222G. The G is the important number because that references the revision to the code. So this will be designed to the G standard, which is the latest standard
of design for this tower, and that this tower will meet or exceed all of the requirements. And it also goes in that generally these towers are designed with a factor of safety of 2 or greater. So not only you design it, then you times it by 2, and that's the level of safety you get with these type of structures.
And again, just for purposes of the record, the design of these facilities is such that they are not designed, to fall over like a bowling pin or a tree in the forest, correct?
That is correct. They do not fall over like a bowling pin. They mechanisms in. If you have your tower and you maybe have a wind shear, it would collapse upon itself or buckle. It would not fall over. It would go to a point to when the wind shear would stop. But again, it's almost you can't prove a negative. Although you're designing it to fail, structures like this do not fail.
So, are there any questions for Mr. Farrell?
And the reason you can't put it elsewhere on that property is because of irrigation that's in the way?
That is correct. If you see this blue, first of all, the in red is the existing property, and the blue is the irrigation system. So this corner, and you have down here, but of course you have residents and existing houses down here. This makes the most sense because it's the furthest away from structures, and that's what we're trying to achieve here.
There's also an additional concern, that we had discovered since the last meeting, that where you see the woods on the left, you actually have wetlands in that area, correct?
That is correct. On the National Wetland Inventory maps,
in this location, far to the west, this is where the wetlands would be. And then, to the extent of how far are they, at a minimum, there'd be a 50-foot buffer. So not only you have the irrigation system now you have a wetland buffer in this area. So, and not to mention that this is a separate parcel, although owned by the owner. Again, when you start getting over here, now you start getting closer to the resident. So maybe you shift the problem from here to here, and now you're going to deal with a different group of people. Again, this made the most sense from our sighting of the tower, that we're furthest away from structures, and again, it just makes sense.
These properties are all actively farmed. We're not aware of any subdivision plans that are coming through, and I think we would all suspect, given the current state of the economy and where this property is, you're unlikely to see major subdivision plans for probably a fair amount of time. And I say that as a land use attorney, but it's the reality of what we're doing right now. Following up on Mr. Farrell's testimony, I'm going to have Pam Bursler, who you may recall from the last hearing we did, to talk a little bit about the real estate aspects of this. You can leave that up if you want. The aerial photograph, actually. Thank you. And Pam has a copy of her report that she will hand up. It's the same report because it's the same general area that we're talking about. Pam, if you could, for the record, please state your name and occupation.
Pamela Bursler, and I'm a manager of the right-of-way division with W.R. McCain and Associates.
Okay. And could you provide the board with a brief narrative of your background?
Yes. I have a bachelor's degree from Wilson College in Pennsylvania and a master's degree from Central Connecticut State University. I am a certified general appraiser in Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia. I'm also certified to perform appraisals based on federal land acquisition standards. And I'm a certified right-of-way appraiser with the International Right-of-Way Association.
Okay. As I'm sure you're familiar, and I know the board's familiar, one aspect of these types of hearings tends to be the impact that these towers have on property values. I presume that you've researched this issue before.
Yes, we have.
Could you provide the board with a summary of your findings with regards to this phenomenon?
Not only did we look at some research on a national scale, and quite frankly, there isn't a lot out there. What is out there does tell us that there doesn't seem to be any adverse effect on property values based on their proximity to a cell tower. And any impact that there might be becomes even more negligible when the distance between the cell tower and the property itself exceeds 350 feet. Sandy Bond, who is a PhD, has probably done the greatest amount of research and the most definitive research, and those have basically been her findings. We also looked at other authors of articles, including Alan Doran, who is an MAI, which is the equivalent of a master's degree with the Appraisal Institute. And based on an article he published in the IRWA Right-of-Way magazine, he indicated that there was no consistent market evidence suggesting any negative impact on the property value of improved residential properties exposed to communications towers. Now, that's the national research. We then brought it down to a level where we could look at it more regionally. And in order to do this, one of the most acceptable practices in the appraisal industry is to do a paired sales analysis. The purpose of the paired sales analysis is to really take two properties and compare them. They need to be as identical as possible. Where they're located doesn't really matter when you're trying to measure the impact of an attribute like a cell tower or high voltage power lines or some other external influence. What does matter is that the paired sales have a similar location, that they went, their transactions occurred at a similar time frame, the lot sizes, the house sizes, and all other features are as similar as you can get them. So we performed paired sales analyses, and we looked at several communities in the local area. One was Swan Cove. Swan Cove is located on Route 54 in the Selbyville area. It is a fairly new subdivision, probably 5 or 6 years old, and it is located where this house right here, there's the cell tower, and the nearest house is about 300 feet from the cell tower. So we looked at the sales of those properties that were in and around the cell tower, and in each case, we found another match on the opposite side of the subdivision that could tell us whether there was any impact on value for the property that was nearest to the cell tower. And what we found in this situation with Swan Cove is that the price differentials range from minus 3% to an actual increase of 15%. In each case, the houses were similar size, the lots were similar sizes, and they sold in a very similar time frame. We also looked at Oyster Harbor, which is a West Ocean City area. And in this situation, right here, there was a cell tower, actually a communications tower, that belonged to the Ocean City Fire Department. That tower is no longer there because they've torn down the old fire station and built a new one. We're presuming they'll probably put up a new tower. That tower was 100 feet from the nearest house. We again did a similar matched pairs analysis looking at the five properties that were closest to that tower and looking at what impact on value may have occurred with their properties. The sales that we used to compare with them were in the backside of Oyster Harbor, so they did not have the influence of that tower. And again, in this situation, the price differentials range from minus 9% to actually a 16% increase. Again, similar size homes, similar size lots, similar time frame that the sales occurred.
And what's the conclusion that you draw from that research?
The conclusion that we drew is that the market perception of the impact of a communications tower on property values often differs greatly from the impact observed in actual sales data. And there appears to be little to no discernible difference in residential property values as a result of their proximity to the cell towers. One other quick thing, in each of these situations, the communications tower was in place prior to the subdivision being developed.
That's just what I was going to ask you, and that's why I was getting the aerial photograph up. As you can see, the closest residential structure to this proposed location is roughly 1,200 to 1,400 feet away. That's because we're looking at an outbuilding at around that 1,100 and change, and the house is actually further to the right. Two questions then. When you're looking at residential structures that are, well, three questions. You're looking at residential structures that are over 1,200 feet away from a tower. What does the research show about the impact on property value?
Based on the research that we've conducted and that we've looked at on a national basis, there would be no negative impact on those property values because of their distance from the communications tower.
In fact, it's true, is it not, that the research tends to show that once you get from roughly 300 to 400 feet to maybe a maximum of 600 feet away, the impact on value disappears?
Any impact that there might be totally disappears.
Is there any impact that you're aware of on farmland from one of these structures?
Not at all.
And in fact, I'll note for the board's education that the statute governing the Ag Lands Preservation Program was actually specifically amended in the early 2000s to allow communications towers such as this as a permitted use on lands that are within the Ag Land Preservation Program. You need approval from the Ag Lands Preservation Foundation, but the point is the code was amended to specifically allow these things. And so just putting a bow on what you were talking about, the fact that this is undeveloped right now and could potentially be developed at some unknown point in the future with a residential subdivision, what your evidence shows, looking at situations where, for lack of a better word, the tower came first, that there is no impact on property.
There has been no impact based on our evidence.
Okay. That's all I have for Ms. Bursler, unless you all have any questions for her.
Okay. Thank you.
What I want to do is just wrap up briefly then. As the board is aware, we're looking for a special use exception for purposes of constructing this tower. The standard, I think, is familiar to us all. That is, the use will not substantially affect adversely the uses of adjacent and neighboring properties. As this application requires no variances, the standard the board must apply is that it will not substantially adversely affect the use of adjoining or adjacent or neighboring property. As we've discussed before, the word substantially is not included by accident. Indeed, cases on statutory construction dictate that this word was intentionally included and must be given its usual and customary definition. To that end, for a complying application to be denied, the impact, if any, on neighboring uses must not just be adverse, it must be substantially adverse. And in this instance, I would argue that there are no substantially adverse impacts shown. We've demonstrated before you this evening the need for the new tower. Verizon Wireless has both a significant gap in its existing coverage as well as capacity concerns with existing locations. There are no tall co-location opportunities within 2 miles of the site. As we discussed, the closest to that, beyond that 2 mile ring, we are already utilizing. Also, I think it's important to note that following the meeting in February, we were presented with another property opportunity by somebody on Briar Hook Road. This was investigated and ruled out, as you heard, because it simply cannot meet the RF goals of the particular project. This site proposes no adverse impact on adjoining properties, much less a substantial one. These towers create no noise or noxious odors. They're lighted in accordance with the Sussex County Code. It does not create a burden on county or municipal services, sewer, water, schools, roads. No generation of traffic beyond approximately a trip per month, and it's more than 1,200 feet away from residential structures. We've also heard about the concerns with the structural capabilities of these facilities. We provided you with a report from a structural engineer, and Mr. Farrell has testified with regard to the safeguards that are taken in these particular instances. We've also had testimony before you regarding impact on property values. You've heard before when you get 200, 300, 400 feet away that some people argue that there's a negative impact. In fact, I note at the Bethany Beach application that you all considered, part of the testimony was that there were 500 properties, or excuse me, 64 properties within a 500-foot radius of the tower. As you can see from this instance, there are three properties within the radius, and all three of those are farm properties. Finally, I recognize that these things are not only not always warmly embraced by the community. However, we all know that people are equally attached to cellular technologies. And while we hear stories of impending advents of new technologies that makes this obsolete, as you've heard in prior hearings, that technology is not available. It's certainly not available in a rural area such as this. Again, there's a guarding against this particular problem by the fact that the code mandates that we have to remove the structure if this new technology becomes available and if these facilities are no longer needed. The code requires it, and our leases require it as well. But the simple fact of the matter is that in order for cell phone technology and smartphone technology to work, these are the types of facilities that you need. And they need height because they need line of sight to the other towers. This particular application, as we said, meets the setback requirements, meets all other requirements of the Sussex County Code, and we are asking the board to approve this application. And one thing I forgot to ask Mr. Farrell that I would like to bring in just to close a loop on it, it'll just be one question. Hey, Ken, could you come back up here for just a second? I saw this in my notes, and I was going to say something to you all. I realized I hadn't gotten his testimony in. In addition to the structural concerns, and we dealt with this at the Shawnee application, but we need it on the record here, one of the other concerns is with potential lightning strikes. Can you walk the board through how this is guarded against?
Yes. It's a 145-foot tower with a 5-foot lightning rod. This has a complete grounding system on the tower. The lightning rod is above. It's the highest point on the tower. There's a full grounding system in the ground. They come in. They do a pre-ground test to see what the resistivity of the ground is, and they design it to that standard so that it's fully protected. The equipment shelter, all the equipment inside the structure, the equipment shelter is the phone switching equipment. Everything is grounded so that it's safe and it will not be struck by lightning. Similar to, you know, the ground rods on houses and church spires and stuff like that. This is a very safe system, and it's fully protected.
So I have nothing further unless the board has anything for us at this time.
You say it won't be struck by lightning, or is it grounds lightning?
It grounds the lightning. It could be struck by lightning, but if it is struck by lightning, it's fully protected.
Because most tall structures do attract lightning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is a high structure, and you know, probably will be struck by lightning, but it is fully protected.
I have nothing further unless the board has anything for us at this time.
Gentlemen, any questions? Well, we're good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone here in favor of the application? Would you like to come up and speak? No? Okay. Shows that one person is here in favor. Is there anyone here in opposition to the application? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You folks aren't? 8. From a show of hands, there's 8. Do you have one representative or whoever would like to speak? Please come forward now and be sworn in.
How many altogether are going to want to speak tonight?
Okay. If you all would come forward, yeah. Then and we'll get you sworn in.
Swear everyone in at first and all at one time. And give your name and address to the young lady, please.
Richard Miller, 23162 Ross Station Road, Seeker, Dublin. That's Carl DeSavo, 4341 Briarwood Road.
Mrs. Miller. And you all swear to tell the truth, the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Whatever order you all wish.
Gentlemen, I have one of the Verizon's phones, what I call a semi-smartphone, and I have a data card. My wife has one. We live about 2,500 feet west of this tower on a small farm, and have never had any problem with coverage. Now, some people might, I don't know, but all I can do is testify that in our situation, there is no problem with coverage. But I'm not here to dispute the fact that Verizon's is in need of additional tower facilities. They are. My position is that this is the wrong spot. I am in the real estate business. I'm a commercial real estate broker. I'm also a general certified appraiser. And I had coincidentally just done an appraisal on the Bonnet Farm, which is right at the juncture where this tower is going to be, for estate purposes with Bob Bonnet, who is unfortunately near death. But as a supplement to that, they asked me to give an opinion as to the impact of the cell tower on the value of the property. Now, it's vacant land right now, but it is capable of being subdivided according to the current regulations along the road front. You can do with 3/4 acre lots, 150 foot frontage. And in my opinion, as I have testified in front of this panel before in other cases, does have a significant impact on the value of improved structures as well as the vacant land that's going to be eventually improved. Having set that aside, I think that there is no doubt, no person in the right mind can tell me or tell anybody that a cell tower is not going to have a negative impact on value. It just goes against all logic. The extent of which is debatable, and the extent of which is a function of linear distance from the tower. But it does have an impact. One of my major concerns is, in addition to that, is Delaware Electric Co-op has just installed a brand new three-phase power line on that side of Driver Group, directly adjacent to where the tower is going to go. And if you were to approve this, please make them put the tower at least a distance from that power line so that if the tower does go over, and it can go over from the base, that it has happened in other places of the country, that at least it won't hit the power line. Right now, you're 60 feet from the paving. I heard a testifying a minute ago. It's a 145-foot tower. It's going to fall right into that power line. That should not be. It's simply a matter of moving it another 100 feet or so. At the very least, do that. Having said all that, I don't believe that Verizon has done enough research as to the alternate spots for the location of the tower. I grew up in this Wesley Church area, as many of you may know, my whole life. And I attended Wesley Church. Wesley Church is within sight of this site. It's about a 4-acre triangular-shaped piece of land, mostly wooded except where the community house and the church are located. There are no houses within 500 feet. It's north and west of this site. I think it would fall into the parameters that Verizon is looking for. The church would certainly benefit from the income of the tower, and it would be in the wooded section, which would not be a detriment to almost anyone. I think it would be a great spot to put it. I know the church is interested in doing it, but of course I know nobody's ever contacted them. So, Dry Hook Road from Atlanta Road to where the first section of houses starts is almost 3/4 of a mile. It's a very pristine, open section of farmland. Because of the ownership of Allen Tattery across the road, Dale Figs, which owns the property we're talking about, and the Von Ed farm, there's very little chance that those properties are going to be developed in the foreseeable future. And I would just hate to see some, for lack of a better term, ugly damn tower at a spot where it does not need to be. So that's my spiel this evening. Thank you much.
Mr. Handy?
Sure.
As you're leaving, would you just point out on that aerial right there where the church property is that you referred to?
Well, it doesn't show on you, just on here. It's about, it's at the corner of Wesley Church Road and Atlanta Road comes up and goes like this. Wesley Church takes off this. It's in that V, so it's...
You're north of the map, then?
North of the map, about where my index finger is.
Okay, thank you.
Now, this is 1,845 feet. If that was swung around, I would say you're about 2,000 feet away.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
You can see it better on this map down on the floor here.
Yeah.
Can you point it out on that map for us?
Yeah, just put that one back up if you...
Okay, this is Atlanta Road. This is Wesley Church Road. And this is Buck's Branch. But the church lies right in this corner, right here.
Okay, right next to that, those two little fingers.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
A V, yeah.
On a scale of this map, it's about a half inch away.
Okay.
Slightly, or maybe...
Maybe an inch.
10 degrees off north. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Carl DeSavo, and I live at the 4341 Briarhook. That proposed site right there is out in the open, and we all have to drive by it every day. We do not want to see it. We have to put up the irrigation because we all have to eat. This is why we suggested moving it over one exactly three-quarters of a mile west on Briarhook Road of the proposed site where they're at. We're at, got a big 20-acre farm there with the wooded area. The pole, monopole, would be in the corner of the property and it would blend in with the trees, so it would not be an eyesore. We're looking at also one of the studies that they did not do was surrounding residential growth. Seaford is growing west of where they're at, as well as Federalsburg and the Bridgeville area is growing and expanding. This tower being in Briarhook on the 4341 would cover all of the growth in that area and also relieve the Seaford tower of what the problem, the overload as they call this. This is why we had suggested that they put it in the on the 4341. For one, we don't want to be seeing it on a road sticking out like a sore thumb. For two, for future growth of the surrounding areas. For three, it's going to blend in with the contour of the land, blending in with the trees. They do have a signal boost that they can increase their frequency going out. So they are capable of moving that additional 3/4 mile. And they did not do a complete thorough study. They're looking at Oyster Harbor and Swan Cove. We don't look like that. That's all heavy residential. We're open farmland.
Right, but I believe that their point was is that that was farmland with a cell tower that eventually got developed.
Eventually it got developed because it went into heavy residential. That cell tower had been put up there years before, so that cell tower got grandfathered in. And then the residential grew up around that. it's the same as you have an existing chicken houses and then residential grove around there. You're going to complain about the chicken smell, but the chicken house was there first. Real estate dealers, they don't tell you all this here. You don't pay attention to it. You don't do your complete homework. So therefore, you're being fed misled. The same with this tower over here. They're not doing their homework on the growth of the surrounding areas. They're talking about northwest of Seaford area. Moving at 3/4 of a mile, you're still within signal boost of where they're trying to relieve the overload. You're also covering the future growth of the surrounding areas over there. Plus, you have it at a location where it's going to blend in with the landscape of the property. So I don't mind you. I don't mind these companies doing their homework, trying to put something up. But please do a thorough investigation.
Thank you.
Good evening, gentlemen. Richard Miller. The Vonette property from where this is going up is going to be roughly 40 feet from that tower. That tower, the property line is 40 feet. And the tower is going to be west of the property. And that is really not no place for it. That's too close to anybody's property line. When a farmer looks out his backfield, he's looking out. He's not looking out at a backfield. He's looking at his backyard. You don't want to see farmers out there. You won't see farmers wanting to see somebody throwing trash out there along his back road. That's just like throwing it out on your backyard. He don't want to see that. And he don't want to see his cell tower. Now, the owner of the property lives 4 miles away, so he's not going to see the cell tower, and he could care less. That's the bottom line. You got good neighbors. Sometimes you got good neighbors. Sometimes you got other neighbors. And that's the way it is. Lightning. Now, I don't care how many lightning rods you put down. Now, that's great, but you're only thinking about one thing. Lightning is going to come down and hit that tower, and there's no doubt about it in my mind. However, we've all been out in the lightning storms, and we've seen that one lightning come down like this here. But then when you do, you see all these little fingers doing that. All them fingers are doing is draining off and going to other places. Now, I've got a couple of irrigation towers out there that won't take much of that stuff. That stuff still got a plenty of juice in it when it comes down on those fingers. So that's going to cost me a lot of money. And 50 feet from the Vonette property is not very good. Now, apparently they were talking about another location down the road. They were most probably talking about Mr. Cooper. Well, that might be 2.5 miles down the road if you take all the way from Route 30 all the way down Briarhook Road. That might be 2.5 miles, closer to 2. And but they didn't say nothing about the Esterson property. Esterson property they've got a place there they can put it, and they can put it off the road. They did look at Charles at the Allen property, but the Allens knew that nobody down that road wanted that, and they didn't want to make the neighbors aggravated. They don't need the money from a cell tower to aggravate the people in that area, and they knew that's all that was going to do by putting it out there on the road where they want to put it. Now, I know they need a cell tower out there. I don't know that, but I've talked to a lot of people out there. I've met a lot of nice people out there. However, everybody who's got a problem with telephones, with the phone service out there, is in a dense populated woods. I don't know if that's got anything to do with it or not, but Everybody else don't seem like to have any problems except for those ones that are in a heavily wooded area. Don't have to be real big, but apparently it hinders their problem. Now, Mr. Peterson wants us to believe that is X marks the spot on that place right where it's got to be for the overlap and everything else. But we've got to figure out this is nothing but cell tower, nothing but telephone stuff. These engineers, you got to get through all the smoke and all the mirrors, and you go out there and separate the wheat from the chaff. And when all these numbers and all this stuff really don't mean too much. These numbers and everything else can be made to work wherever it's feasible, not X marks the spot. The reason why they want it right there is because they don't have to have no road, and they're not going to cost them much for electric put in there. Now, that's what I call the cost of doing business. Now, they've got to. Everybody has a cost of doing business. Anybody who puts up a cell tower, a fence, a house, or anything next to you is a neighbor. And all I'm expecting them people to be is good neighbors. You want good neighbors? Everybody in this room wants good neighbors. And good neighbors don't put cell towers right someplace where it's easy for them and good for them, and the hell with you. Everybody wants good neighbors. Now, I say this cell tower can be moved and put in a good place where it won't be hindering people and won't be a bothersome. As far as this cell tower falling and crumbling, nah, that ain't going to happen. All you got to do is think about that for a little while and say, nah, that ain't going to happen. And as far as property values, well, somebody said, well, they ain't sure that there was no property within 300 feet of it. Well, I don't know why they did that if it don't bother property values. Yeah, that's another thing right there. But there is property values. This actually does hurt property values. You can talk about it all you want to, but that's the bottom line, and it does hurt your property values. I don't want us to look at that tower when I go outside and take a look out there. If I live 4 miles away, it wouldn't bother me, but I don't live 4 miles away. And I would like for you, I'll go out of my way and I'll help those people find a better place to put this tower. And that's the best I can do. And I'll go out there and help you. But as far as being X marks the spot, X don't mark the spot. We're not working with a rocket science stuff here. This is just poor telephone service, whether it's cell phone or whatever. There's a lot of variables. They can do things with these cell towers and these antennas to make them do just about anything they want to. That's it. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Miller?
Yes.
How far do you live from that tower?
How far do I live from that tower?
Can you point it out on the map for us?
I live about a mile away.
A mile away from the tower?
Yeah. But I till that property right over here, Mr. Vonnet's property.
Yes.
I till all that property.
Yeah, but you're about a mile away from the tower.
But I live about a mile away.
Okay.
But like I said, I don't want to go up that property and look at that cell tower. It's right in the backyard. It's 40 feet from the property line. That's no place to put a cell tower up next to somebody else's property line. I realize we're out in the rural area, but that's no way to treat rural people. That's just not no way to treat rural people. Like I said, I'll go out and I'll try to help them people find. Now, Esterson's got a place out there, and it's not
It's not 1,000 feet away from where that tower is, or where they want to put this tower. I've talked to the Estersons. They've talked to the Estersons. But the Estersons want it away from the road. More of that stuff. Well, sometimes it takes a little bit more of that stuff to make money. They should be interested in making people happy with where they put the cell tower and telephone service. If you put a tower up where people don't want it, you're not making the people happy. And it's their job to make people happy. That's what they should be doing. They shouldn't be looking for a cheap way of doing business. Any questions? Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Dottie Miller. I represent Robert Bonnet for power of attorney. I'm also the head of the ditch committee there. We just cleaned the thing out. Which is only going to be, the tower's going to only be a few feet away from it. It's kind of blowing my mind. They're talking about all these people and all this service and how fast it's going to be necessary, considering the census shows that Seaford in 10 years basically hasn't grown but 84 people. And according to the League of Voters, Seaford, Laurel, and Delmar can go together now. So we must not be growing too fast, because at one point we had our own council person. I just find it very hard to believe in this day and age, and as long as cell towers have been around and cell phones, that the equipment's not available, that they cannot put something up that's at least 5 to 6 miles apart. I talked to Dolores Latcher. She said that she had been talked to by some of the cell tower people about putting extensions up on the water tower. Well, I'm trying to figure out how they're doing this, because by road, it probably is 2.5 miles from town. But this is wireless, and I think as a crow flies, it's pretty close to that limit. They could, especially at the industrial park, they should be able to put some additions up there. I feel like a parent who's being explained to by a teenager what they want me to know, not what I want to know. Who's liable if this thing comes down? How long is the contract for? Who notifies who in the county to say, okay, we're done with this contract, we can't use this equipment anymore, we're taking it down? Who's liable to get it out of there? Otherwise, it's a permanent structure if somebody's not responsible to take it down. I know what he's saying as far as the strength of the tower and all this, but Robert's farm a few years ago lost a silo to a storm. Allen's lost the back ends of 3 chickens' houses a few years later than that. So if a storm takes down a silo, this thing's pretty much going to come down fast. I know what things are designed to do, but I'm old enough to know they don't necessarily happen the way they're supposed to be designed to do it. There's so much about this. Yes, I had the farm appraised. But appraisals, to me, have two values, for divorce and death. Because a real appraisal is what somebody will pay you for your piece of property, nothing else. And I could stand here and tell you, because there are 6 acres now on Allison's Road up for sale, and it's for $200,000. But Robert would rather die than have anybody split his farm, as long as he's breathing. And as long as it can happen, I'm not selling an inch. I'll mortgage it, I'll sell the whole farm, and the person will have to say that they will not sell a portion of that farm as long as he's breathing. Love him, respect him too much. Now, the other thing that kind of is bugging me is AT&T is now talking about buying T-Mobile. Okay. So that means they get the cell towers from T-Mobile. Sprint says they can't afford to stay in business if AT&T buys Sprint or buys T-Mobile. Well, then somebody's going to buy Sprint. There are a lot of unregistered cell towers out there. There is no coordination between states. We don't know exactly. Okay, we might have the, you know, need it right here, supposedly. But we're only 6 miles in that area from Fellowsburg. How do we know what Maryland's got? There's no coordinate. The industry is so short and so, you know, so small and such a short-lived service that the coordination between the states is not like it would be with other services that we have. Who knows? I mean, we don't. And actually, I really do think you respect somebody else's property and you don't do anything to devalue the property or to offend your neighbor. But that's because I'm old. I think we're being told a lot of things, and I'm not saying they're lying, but they're walking on a thin line of explaining what's the real truth. Because in other states, in other cities, these towers have to be camouflaged. They have to be in other locations. And I didn't realize until Saturday, you're not supposed to have the thing up by your head, because they don't know about that yet. Now, Miller has a pacemaker, so he can't have it up in his breast pocket or his bib overhauls. And fertility doctors are now requesting that people that have problems with infertility, especially the men, do not put them in the pockets. Now, if these things are so cotton picking safe, we got a problem. And plus the fact here, she did talk to other properties. We have Esterson's, we have Doug Corey, we have Cooper property, which has an access road. And this is just information I know you all are probably very aware of. But according to changes that are being made statewide right now, they can't put a windmill up in such a position that it falls on another person's property. And it has to be taken down within a year if it's not being used. And I realized that what they're saying, there probably are problems, but that plot of Mr. Figgs' is 400 acres. Please don't tell me that the only thing fits. In 400 acres, it should be able to fit up next to a woods or someplace else and away from trees. With the article on the... But see, all those properties of which people she talked to had woods. They were interested in putting it next to the woods, but nobody wanted to put it on the road because nobody wanted to offend. So that's why she didn't get too far with her little decision. But then kind of she blew my mind because she also told Esterson it would cost too much money so to put it on their property. So then I went to find out if she had gotten an estimate on how much it would cost to put it on the property, and she had not. So, I mean, visually, you can see 75 feet difference in 100 and or 1,200. But get all your records together first before you keep telling me, you know, you can't afford it. Verizon can afford a heck of a lot more than what, you know, if I can afford it for an irrigation system, Verizon can afford it for a cell tower. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Did you want, you had some rebuttal?
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, we have 11 letters in opposition to the office.
And any in favor?
None in favor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to take an opportunity to have Mr. Peterson respond to a couple of comments that you heard. One, and I apologize if I get the name wrong, but I think it was Mr. DeSalto was talking about his property. That was the one at 4341 Briarhook Road that I had asked Mr. Peterson about that was too far to the west to work. We did investigate that property. Secondly, there was reference to a property that's to the northwest of this particular site, the church property. In addition to the fact that there's a fair number of residential structures fairly close to it, if you could, residential lots, if you could tell the board your opinion on whether that site would work or not.
Sure, I'd like to mark it on the exhibit over here, approximately. It's actually northeast of the proposed. Mm-hmm. Roughly the corner of Wesley Church in Atlanta. Well, between Bucks Branch and Wesley Church Road and Atlanta. It's quite plain to see that that would represent a move northeast from the proposed. Easterly moves us away from the gap in coverage, which is largely to the west, and north moves us away from Seaford, where the capacity issue is really centered. So it really doesn't. If it was moving in one of those directions, you know, and not the other, or vice versa, it may be a mixed bag and may be doable, but it really hurts us on both fronts. So it's an inferior location.
And in fact, it was not within the search ring that was generated for this property.
That's correct.
And in fact, what we had tried to do was find large lots where there would be greater separation from residential distances, and the three were actually mentioned tonight. The one that we're on, the one that Mr. Miller farms, which is next door, obviously, we know they are not interested, and the property that's directly across the street, which is also a farming operation, was not interested, although it did not communicate to us any objection to this application. With regard to the Estrogen property, there were some of the same concerns. I don't know where the conversations about money came from, but the two problems that we were aware of from that site is the location that they wanted to put it would have required us getting variances from the Board of Adjustment. It was not going to meet the setback distances. And in addition, that was closer to more residential properties than the present location is. So with that, if there's any questions the board wants to follow up with us, we'd be happy to answer them. And Mr. Figgs is here if you have questions about the farming operation.
Mrs. Miller had some questions. Who was liable for the tower if it fell, how long the contract was, and who takes it down if it's not used? And of course, we know the answer to the latter. But what about the first two?
The former would be the owner of the tower, which would be Verizon Wireless or its appropriate subsidiaries. The leases are proprietary information, but I can tell you the general length of these leases are 25 years, and they have automatic renewal periods built into them. If the lease was not renewed, the tower would have to be removed, because at that point the landlord is clearly saying he doesn't want it on his property anymore.
Okay.
You can see from driving around not only the county but the state, you can see those towers have been around for a while, and most of them are still being utilized. And those that it actually came up in a Kent County hearing I had a month ago about a tower that was no longer being used. The issue there was the tower was actually constructed at a time before there was an ordinance mandating that it be removed if it's not being used. So in essence, it was grandfathered. This one would not be subject to that.
Mrs. Miller also said something to the effect that she didn't understand why towers couldn't be 5 miles apart. Can you elaborate a little further on why that is?
Sure. Under certain circumstances, you know, maybe in the Midwest, where you have a large expanse of just open roadway, and you can build a 250, 300, 400-foot tower every 5 miles,
Now, depending on a whole host of other variables, that may be adequate for covering that stretch of roadway. You know, on a road that maybe does a couple hundred cars a day, where you don't have a giant taxing of the system, which shrinks coverage footprints, et cetera. In a case like this, 5 miles apart, in an area like this, hasn't been adequate since the advent of cellular back in the 80s. I wouldn't call it a short-lived technology. It's been around since about 1983. Motorola launched the first network in Chicago in that time frame. And even then, in and around Metropolis, cell spacing was at most 2 miles. Now, when you get into a downtown area like, you know, Wilmington, Philadelphia, there's cell sites every couple blocks because of that capacity demand. In and around an area like this, the cell spacing is appropriate for the uses and levels of population. And as you can plainly see, there is another facility directly south of this, and it's...
Let me scale it off.
It's about 1.75 miles southeast of the existing. That's already a facility that's attempting to offload the Seaford site and isn't able to. There's just too much, too many subscribers there that want to use the service in too many ways for these two sites to support it.
Well, and she had mentioned that, yes, and obviously Seaford isn't growing. DuPont is no longer what it once was. So it's not so much the populace as much as it is the use. Is that correct?
That's correct. 10 years ago, the population may have been greater than it is today. I don't have the population numbers in front of me. It may have only grown marginally, as was testified to. However, you know, the population, although it would directly impact subscriber usage, it's not the only factor. More important is the way that folks are using their phones. 10 years ago, there were no 9-year-old kids on the bus, you know, watching a music video on their mobile device over a 3G network. I imagine that's pretty commonplace today. Folks weren't checking email, downloading, you know, anything they wanted to.
Using it for computer service, is that add to the load?
Pardon?
Using it for computer service?
Absolutely. If you have a wireless modem, these types of uses just weren't around and maybe weren't even envisioned 10 years ago, and now they're commonplace, things that we take for granted. So it's really not the number of users so much as the different services and the amount that people are really using these services.
And it's also likely, probably, Andrew, when Ms. Miller had made the statement about not growing, that 10 years ago, between 10 years and now, you've certainly, while the population may have stayed static, the growth in the number of subscribers as well as folks passing through the Seaford area is obviously larger than it was then, in addition to all the other uses that are occurring.
Absolutely.
The federal government requires that we not consider health risks simply because it's their opinion or what have you that the output of these phones, I guess, is so minute that it won't affect us as humans. How does that affect, you know, your ability to transmit and receive?
If we're talking about phones, it's kind of a different conversation than we're talking about. I'm happy to answer, but just to be clear, the federal mandates are really, there are separate mandates around handsets. The mandates that my emission study uses a watermark are the emissions levels that the FCC considered safe for facilities. You can control the proximity that you place your handset to your head. In some respects, you can't control how close you are. If you have to drive by a tower to get somewhere, you really can't control it. If the road goes by, you're going to go by there. So there are separate criteria for handsets, and they all have to have FCC-type approval. So the handsets are also considered safe by the FCC and scientific bodies and universities that conduct these studies. But to answer your question, I think having more towers closer, although it's kind of counterintuitive, also makes it easier for the mobile device to talk back to the tower. It uses less power, your battery will last longer, and it has to transmit a signal that's not as strong. The handsets are super advanced, as we all know. They seek to conserve battery life. So they know how far they are from the facility just by the signal strength that they're receiving. When they know they're close to a facility, they don't waste power shouting as loud as they can back to the facility. So by having a facility close to you, you will actually be exposed to less emissions from your handset, and that's a fact.
And I think also Ms. Miller had testified, or Mr. Hamby had testified regarding the property area, and I think one of the important things he said is you have these three farms here, and it's very unlikely that any of these three farms are going to be developed in the foreseeable future. I think what that does is lends itself again to this being a good location. You try to find locations. You heard from the last hearing we had, I know what you went through with the AT&T tower, which was not my fault. You had lots of folks who lived immediately proximate to the area, and that increases the issues that this board has to deal with. Finding a location in the middle of an area where development is not foreseen to occur in the foreseeable future, putting aside, again, the evidence on there that there is no impact, I think further suggests that this is an appropriate location, that there is no substantial adverse impact to neighboring properties.
Thank you.
I got one question. I might have missed it. What is the distance from the line, from the property line to Mr. Miller's, where he's talking about, where that tower's going to be set? What's the distance from that and the power lines? I mean, if it did collapse, would it hit the power lines?
If it did not collapse as it was designed to collapse,
okay,
that is, if it were to fall over like a tree, like the trees down the road that are close to the power line,
yes,
it could take the power line. Mm-hmm. If it fell that way. Again, they're not designed to fall that way. They're not built to fall that way. Right now, it's roughly 60 feet from the pavement.
From the pavement.
And it's about 54 feet from Mr. Miller's property. We have a little bit of wiggle room where we could shift it a little bit further back without getting into the
irrigation
system. Mm-hmm. So it is possible, working with the property owner, that we could move it another 10, 15, 20 feet away from either of the two locations. So it could be moved back a little bit. But to answer your question directly, if it was a tree situation, falling like a tree, which again, they're not designed to do, it would hit the power lines.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and again, that, as Verizon is the owner of the tower, would be the one responsible for that.
I just didn't know. My money missed when you said that before, what the distance was. I didn't know if it could be moved, both ways.
There's a little bit of wiggle room to move it back before having to make, having to interfere with the irrigation system. I know that the preference would be from a lot of folks to stick it all the way on the other side of the property. Again, you've seen from the aerial photograph that it is actively farmed. If you would like, Mr. Figgs can certainly come up here and add something on the record regarding the impact to the operations. We've also got the wetlands that are along those tree lines based on the state inventory of wetlands in that regard. And if the board would like, I have a map that can provide
you. And the problem with putting it in the wetlands is it's not allowed? Is that?
Well, the Army Corps frowns upon these things in the wetlands, and then you have buffers that the code mandates on top of the wetlands, in addition to getting it from the Briarhook Road all the way back through the farmers' active farming operations. And that's why I kind of allude to what the ag preservation folks talk about, because it was referenced at the prior hearing, not by us, but by somebody who was speaking in opposition, that Mr. Figgs has put his property into ag preservation in another state, and the thought was he would do it here as well. I can tell you the ag preservation folks would not like to see a tower tucked in a corner with a road and everything that has to cut through the farm. They would like to see it as a minimal impact on the farming operation as possible, because the goal is, while providing an income to the farmer, the goal is also to maintain the farming operation, which is why it goes into preservation anyway. To my knowledge, this property is not in preservation. I was simply making the observation based on the statement that was raised at the last hearing.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
They brought up the Wesley Church deal, but they didn't bring up the Esterson deal.
Nope. And Mr. Miller?
Mr. Miller?
We'll address that with them.
Address the board, please, not...
Oh, well, I'm...
That's okay.
Okay.
All right. So, do you would like for them to do that?
Yes. Okay. I would like to hear what they got to say about that.
And because the hour's getting late, is there anything else that you would like...
I've got... I'll need to say something else in a few minutes, too.
Well, your opportunity is now.
My opportunity is now?
Yes,
okay,
sir.
My opportunity is now. When I first found out about this tower... I was at Mr. Figgs. Mr. Figgs and I were friends. And he said, I'm putting up a cell tower, having a cell tower put up on the property out there. I said, you are? He said, yeah. I said, whereabouts? He said, well, someplace down the road on Briarhook Road supposed to be, down by Roberts. I said, I don't know if I like that or not. And he laughed. He said, well, there's nothing you can do about it. I said, okay. So I went down the road, and that's when I seen it. That's when I seen the sign up on the Owl's Nest Road. And I said, well, Owl's Nest Road. So I went down there and talked to him, and I said, he said, well, they've got that sign at the wrong place. I said, they do? He said, yeah. I said, well, where is this cell tower going to be? He said, right there on the corner, right where he said, right here. I said, is that where it's going to be? I said that's gonna be a real hazard to my irrigation. He laughed and laughed and laughed, and he said, you know what? I'm gonna have plenty of money. I said it's gonna hit yours too. He laughed. He said, I'll have plenty of money to fix mine. How you doing? That's why I'm here, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you address the Esterson property?
And actually, my notes indicate that was done the last.
I thought it
during
was.
The rebuttal.
I did reference two things. Ms. Manchel had the conversations, but as I put on the record, there were two problems. Again, we're trying to find properties away from residential. Secondly, where they would like to have placed the tower, we would have been before you seeking variances from the setbacks because their property is irregularly shaped, and in the back we would have been too close to the neighboring property lines. That's what I had put on the record with regard to that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. That will be the end of the testimony that we will hear in reference to the case. So having said that, I will entertain a motion.
Chairman, I make a motion to table this case at the next regular meeting. Or is that enough time, or do you want to, or no?
June 20th.
June 20th?
Yeah, it's three weeks. Two weeks.
If let me just interject. Mr. Calloway, of course, is absent today. He does have the right to participate in the case if he goes back and listens to the tape of the hearing and takes a look at the file, as you all have done. I don't know if that's his desire. If so, if that 2 weeks is going to be enough time for him to free his schedule and do that. I'm just going to suggest maybe you put it off for the first one in July.
The first one in July, then. Give him a chance if he wants to do that.
Okay. So the motion is to table the hearing until the first regular meeting in July. Do I have a second?
July 11th.
July 11th.
Second.
Second by Mr. Hudson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Okay, that concludes that hearing.